Good morning, folks. Welcome to another edition of AJ Morning Report. This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. It is Thursday, July 30th, 2026, and for the next half hour, we'll be bringing you news from the Worcester TNG, along with other local news services. Thanks, as always, to the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Mass Commission for the Blind for their ongoing support. This is Harry, along with Bill, coming to you live from the Patricia A. Fletcher Studio at Audio Journal in Worcester, Massachusetts. And now on the line is Bill with our weather. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning, everybody. This is Bill Ruggiero, and welcome into a Thursday morning, everybody. Well, things kind of look dismal out there. It's going to be cool, raw, and a little bit of rain from time to time this afternoon. We're not going to be seeing the heavy showers and thunderstorms that we saw yesterday, but we're going to be seeing some persistent rain, and some rain could be moderate to a little bit heavy during the day. But then, well, tonight is going to clear out, and then tomorrow is going to be in the lower 80s with sunny skies with clouds, but there is a risk of a shower in the afternoon. And then, the weekend is going to be nice on Saturday. That's the pick of the weekend. It's going to be up there 80. And then Sunday, we got a front coming through with some showers and thunderstorms, likely in the afternoon. Not a washout, but just keep an eye on the sky. And then Monday looks wet and rainy on Monday. So we're going to get this persistent pattern that we're in. And then Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday look great, up in the 80s and sunny skies. And then Friday, we're in the 90s with humidity and possible thunderstorms in the afternoon. And that's the way I see it. Now back to you, Harry.
Thank you very much, Bill. And for those curious about the national forecast, along Florida and the Gulf Coast and the Midwest on Thursday, there will be some drenching thunderstorms. And as Bill told us, there will be some rain today in the New England area, but not as bad as we've had it, as it starts to turn drier in the Mid-Atlantic. And finally, it will be hot in the Rockies out west. And for those curious about our reservoirs, the TNG is reporting that our Worcester reservoirs are 90% full, and that number might go up a little bit tomorrow.
Yep.
Well, Bill, you have any plans today or for the weekend?
Well, I'm planning to go to the dentist today, and I'm planning to come into Audio Journal this afternoon and see you.
All right. Looking forward to it.
Yep.
Okay, well, you have a wonderful day. We'll talk to you soon.
You too. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. Okay, now let's go to the top of the fold of the front page for Thursday's Telegram and Gazette, July 30th. Convicted murderer accused of killing cellmate. Story by Brad Patrician. A Springfield man convicted of murder in 2009 is nearing trial in Worcester Superior Court on previously unreported allegations of murdering his cellmate in a medium-security Gardner prison 4 years ago. And moving on to national news, Fauci invokes Fifth at contentious hearing. GOP challenges legacy as Democrats push back. This story comes to us from USA Today. Dr. Anthony Fauci may be held in contempt after refusing to answer Republicans' questions about the origins of COVID-19 as he sat in a witness chair invoking the Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination. His Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination. The former head of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, under seven presidents, appeared under subpoena July 29th before the Senate Committee on Homeland Security and Government Affairs. Over and over, Fauci repeated, on the advice of counsel, I respectfully decline to answer based upon my rights under the Fifth Amendment to the Constitution. The hearing became so tense that Senator Rand Paul, the Kentucky Republican who chairs the committee and who for years has accused Fauci of covering up the origin of the coronavirus, had one of Fauci's lawyers ejected from the room for sitting next to him at the witness table. Rand said a Senate panel will hold a vote next week on whether to hold Fauci in contempt. He said Fauci should have testified because President Joe Biden issued him a preemptive pardon. It's against the law to obstruct an investigation of Congress, Paul said. There will be repercussions. Dr. Anthony Fauci, now 85 years old, was the public face of the federal government's response to the COVID-19 pandemic. He retired from federal government work at the end of 2022. Paul has said if Fauci perjures himself, the pardon for past actions won't protect him. Reading from a one-page statement at the start of the hearing, Fauci said that he would be invoking his Fifth Amendment right because the hearing had one purpose, to entrap him into saying something that could potentially be used against him in court. He said Rand Paul had an unhinged obsession with prosecuting him. He cited repeated slanderous comments about me and Paul's recent release of Fauci's diary aimed at embarrassing and intimidating me. The only conclusion I can reach is that the sole reason he is calling me before this committee is to get me to say something, anything, that could vindicate his repeated public pledges that I end up, in his words, behind bars, Fauci said. Moving on to another story. This is more state story. Parole board grants release to killer with an escape on his record. Story by Brad Patrician. The state parole board granted parole to a former Worcester man convicted of second-degree murder in 1978. In 1990, he escaped from prison for several days before being apprehended in the bathroom of a Worcester restaurant. Abdul Bari Mustafa, formerly known as Paul O'Neill, was ordered released with conditions over the objections of family members of his victim and testimony from a local prosecutor document show. According to its July 27th decision, the parole board, by a 6-1 vote, ruled Mustafa, again formerly Paul O'Neill, who would now be about 70, was sufficiently rehabilitated to be released to a long-term residential program with electronic monitoring and other conditions. Mustafa was convicted of second-degree murder in 1978 in the killing of 20-year-old Armand Robin III, who was found with an abdominal stab at the Salvation Army Temporary Shelter, 640 Main Street. And our final story from the front page, Natick couple terrorized by eBay settle for nearly $60 million. Nearly 6 years ago, after several eBay employees were charged with harassing and terrorizing a Natick couple in retaliation for negative stories posted on the couple's e-commerce website, a federal lawsuit has been settled for more than $55 million. Ina Steiner and her husband David Steiner announced the settlement Monday, July 27th, on their website, E-Commerce Bytes, an online news publication platform for e-commerce merchants and online auction sellers. David and I officially settled the lawsuit we filed in 21 against eBay and its former executives over the stalking and harassment campaign we endured in 2019, designed to stop our reporting, Ina Steiner wrote. The landmark civil rights settlement includes $55.7 million in compensation and charitable commitments. We're going to take a break and hear a message from the Mass Commission for the Blind. We'll be right back.
What's your vision?
My vision is 20/200.
Light perception in the right eye, zero vision in the left eye.
No. What's your vision?
My goal is to become a journalist.
To be able to work.
Financial independence.
At the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind, we believe that all people who are blind or visually impaired should have the opportunity to work and thrive. To learn how we can help you meet your employment or workforce goals, call 800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/MCB.
And now on to the Nation and World Briefs. Explosive diarrhea parasite cases rise, now in 45 states. This story comes to us from USA Today and Reuters. Cases of cyclosporosis, a stomach-churning parasitic infection known for causing explosive diarrhea, have now reached 45 states as infections climb well into the thousands. There have been 6,707 laboratory-confirmed cases of the illness since May 1st, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention said July 28th in its weekly update, an increase of more than 2,500 since its previous report on July 21st. Cases have also now been recorded in four more states since that earlier report. More than 11,500 additional cases, primarily in Michigan and Ohio, have not yet been confirmed by laboratories, the CDC said. There have been over 423 hospitalizations and no deaths, according to the agencies. We'll be right back. Now on to some of our local stories. Worcester man drowns in Connecticut River. This story is by Craig Simone. Turner's Falls. A Worcester man drowned over the weekend in a deceivingly beautiful part of the Connecticut River. Hermes Mariano Almonte Villar, age 21, has been identified as the drowning victim by Northwestern District Attorney David Sullivan's office. Turner's Falls Fire Chief Luke Harnett said the victim was swimming with others at Rock Dam, about a quarter mile walk from Migratory Way in Turner's Falls, when he went underwater and failed to resurface. Harnett said they're trying to deter people in cars from going to the spot to swim. He said there were at least 30 to 40 vehicles at the time of the drowning. It's a very popular spot. Unfortunately, this is not the first time it has happened in that exact same location, Harnett said. First Light, which is the owners of the property along the river there, will be closing the gate to that Migratory Way nights and weekends from now on. It is going to be completely closed to vehicular access, Harnett said. A Montague Police Department dispatcher received a frantic call just before 6 p.m. on Saturday, July 25th. And the victim died despite first responders' efforts to revive him with CPR. In other news, the Scouts launch campaign to upgrade aging camp kitchen. This story is by Craig Simone. Local Boy Scout organization Heart of New England Council conducted a tour and project kickoff celebration on Tuesday, July 28th, at Treasure Valley Scout Reservation, 394 Pleasantdale Road. Heart of New England Council is a Scouting America council that serves Cub Scouts PACs, the Boy Scouts of America troops, exploring post and venturing crews in central Massachusetts. The Heart of New England's council kicked off marks the start of construction on a new kitchen facility at the campsite. Tom Chamberlain, former longtime tree warden for Sturbridge, is also a longtime volunteer for the local Boy Scout organization and serves on the council committee, which oversees the management of Treasure Valley. The new kitchen is needed very badly, Cumberland says. The current facility was never built or designed to feed 400 to 500 scouts every meal. Every day the camp is in operation. It was poorly designed. It's just not designed and built to really efficiently produce the amount of meals that we like to have for our youth coming to camp. Originally built in 1936, the current East Lodge kitchen was designed for a different era, Chamberlain said. Today, inadequate storage, limited food prep space, and outdated equipment and infrastructure make it a challenge to meet the needs of expanding attendance, he said. As a result, the council set an ambitious goal to raise almost $2.5 million to transform the dining experience at Treasure Valley. Thanks to generous early supporters, Phase 1, the Dining Pavilion, has been fully funded at $750,000. Construction of a new dining pavilion is complete. Opened for the 2025 summer season, it has already enriched the camp experience for thousands of scouts, Chamberlain said. On to our next story in the local section. Worcester is planning Stretch Code Education Campaign. Story by Henry Schwann. The city plans to start a campaign in the fall to educate residents and businesses about the specialized stretch code. John Odell, the city's chief sustainability officer, provided the timeline during the Monday, July 27th meeting of the Green Worcester Advisory Committee. The goal is to help the public and real estate developers understand the code's impacts and cost. In 2023, the City Council voted 10 to 1 to opt in to the code, which requires enhanced energy efficiency standards for new construction projects. It took effect in 2024. Earlier this year, City Hall recommended a 20-month pause in the code, citing concerns from developers about increased cost that had slowed construction. The recommendation was pulled back after the city discovered that no action could be taken on the code until 3 years after its effective date. The Worcester Business Development Corp. has expressed concerns that the code's added costs could discourage developers from investing in its Green Tech Park project, located along Interstate 190. City Hall recently recommended tax increment financing for prospective advanced manufacturing developers interested in Green Tech Park to lighten their tax load. A City Council subcommittee plans to take up the recommendation. Mr. Ted Connor, a member of the Green Worcester Advisory Committee, would like City Hall to support tax increment financing for development projects focused on environmental sustainability. It seems to me that ought to be considered, said Mr. Connor during the committee's July 27th meeting. We'll take another break and we'll be right back.
What's going on in your town is important to you. Meetings that decide your taxes, changes in laws in your community, plans for new housing and businesses, and news about schools are all vital for you to know. Here on Audio Journal, we read many local community newspapers each week. In addition to the news of your community and area, you'll also hear about special events, stories about your neighbors, their businesses, their activities, and more. Stay in touch with your community on Audio Journal, broadcasting to print-impaired residents of central Massachusetts.
And we're back. For those interested in local restaurants, especially chain restaurants, TGI Fridays at the Blackstone Shops in Millbury are shutting their doors for good. The TGI Fridays at the Blackstone Valley Shops has closed. After much consideration, we have made the difficult decision to close this TGI Fridays location, reads a social media post from the chain's Millbury restaurant. We are incredibly grateful for the opportunity to serve you over the years and to be part of your celebrations, milestones, and memories. Your loyalty and support have meant so much to us. A sign in the window of the restaurant directs customers to other locations of the chain in Massachusetts. The Millbury location is no longer listed on the chain's website. The restaurant was among the early tenants of the Blackstone Valley Shopping Plaza, which opened in 2003. The Dallas-based TGI Fridays has closed several of its restaurants in recent years. In 24, the Marlboro location was among a half dozen closed in Massachusetts. The remaining locations are in Everett, Stoughton, and Methuen, according to the chain's website. We'll be right back. Now on to some business news. CEO of Cracker Barrel stepping down. She led chain during reban controversy. Story by USA Today. The company announced July 27th that Julie Messina will step down as CEO and member of the board effective August 10th. Messina will be replaced by David Deno, most recently the CEO of Blooming Brands, the owner of casual restaurant chains such as Outback Steakhouse, Carrabba's Italian Grill, and Bonefish Grill. Messina will remain with Cracker Barrel as an advisor until October 9th, the company said. In other business news, World Cup breaks help lift Coca-Cola. Let me say that again. World Cup breaks help lift Coca-Cola. The company tops estimates for second quarter revenue. This story from Reuters. While fans complained about World Cup hydration slowing the pace of the games, top sponsor Coca-Cola was pleased with the boost they provided to its energy drink sales that drove strong quarterly results and a raise in annual targets. The hydration breaks that split the matches into four segments created additional advertising opportunities for brands and lined the pockets of broadcasters such as Fox. I'm not sure whether these hydration breaks are going to be a permanent feature of the soccer world, but we were not unhappy with them in the World Cup, said CFO John Murphy, noting a particular boost for the company's Powerade brand. And our last business article is an analysis about El Niño assumptions. For insurers, the periodic El Niño climate phenomenon has traditionally lowered the risk of costly Atlantic hurricanes. But decades of population growth along coastal areas and rising property values are forcing them to rethink that assumption. Marked by warmer-than-average sea surface temperatures in parts of the Pacific Ocean, El Niño typically suppresses Atlantic hurricanes by creating atmospheric conditions that make it harder for storms to form. U.S. government scientists said El Niño arrived in June, which was also the start of the Atlantic hurricane season. They expect a below-average season in 26 of 8 to 14 named storms and 1 to 3 major hurricanes. We'll be right back with Today in History. Today is July 30th. On this date in the year 762, this is the proposed date on which Baghdad was founded by Abbasid Caliph al-Mansur. On this date in 1863, Henry Ford, the American industrialist who revolutionized manufacturing with his assembly line methods, was born in Spring Wells Township, Michigan. As founder of the Ford Motor Company, he made cars accessible to the middle class. In 1866, a peaceful demonstration supporting African-American citizenship by freed black men, some of whom were veterans of the Civil War, was attacked by a white mob, many of whom were police and former Confederate soldiers in New Orleans. The attack left at least 34 black men dead and more than 114 others injured. That was in 1866. In 1912, Japan's Emperor Meiji died at age 59. in 1945. Japanese submarine I-58 torpedoed the USS Indianapolis shortly after it delivered key components of the atomic bomb to Tinian Island in the South Pacific. In 1956, the phrase "In God We Trust" became the national motto of the United States after President Dwight D. Eisenhower signed a joint resolution by Congress. The phrase was to appear on all forms of American currency. Again, that was not long ago. It was 1956. In 1965, in a landmark moment for health care, President Lyndon B. Johnson signed amendments to the Social Security Act of 1935 into law, creating two federal health programs, Medicare and Medicaid. On this date, 1971, a mid-air collision between Al Nippon Airways Boeing 727 and a Japanese Air Force F-86 jet fighter over Morioka, Iwate, Japan, resulted in the death of 162 passengers. In 1974, President Richard Nixon handed subpoenaed White House recordings to Special Prosecutor Leon Jaworski after being ordered by the U.S. Supreme Court to do so. Well, that wraps up the morning report for today. Thank you for listening. And remember, you can always hear this show not only on our website, but our mobile app, but also on four podcast platforms: Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, and Podbean. Have a great day.
Audio Journal is supported in part by the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind. We are a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.
When my dad started to lose his vision, we were worried. Sure, his doctor gave me and my mom some handouts, and I did my fair share of research. But we had no idea how much of a challenge vision loss would be, or how it would impact his quality of life. That's why I was so glad we discovered Mass Commission for the Blind. They work with my dad, and they will work with you and your loved one as well, to develop future plans and new skills and assistive technology. They even helped Dad get access to talking books and newspapers. He was so excited.
If your loved one is blind or visually impaired, find out if they are eligible to register for services. Call 1-800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/MCB. That's 1-800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/MCB.
Hello. A lot of people are familiar with various assistance programs that provide support for folks with disabilities, money troubles, or food insecurity. But did you know there's one organization which does good work on all three fronts? Welcome to the Department of Transitional Assistance. The DTA serves 1 in 7 residents of the Commonwealth with direct economic assistance like cash benefits and SNAP food assistance, as well as workforce training opportunities. Those served by the department include children, elders, and people with disabilities. And despite the misconceptions you might have heard, many of those who receive benefits from the government work regularly and are gainfully employed. The DTA mission is to assist and empower low-income individuals and families to meet their basic needs, to improve their quality of life, and achieve long-term economic self-sufficiency. The DTA assistance line is open from 8:15 a.m. to 4:45 p.m. That number is 877-382-2363. 877-382-2363.
WICN Public Radio is a proud partner of Audio Journal. Audio Journal provides news, information, and entertainment to visually and print-impaired residents of central Massachusetts. Audio Journal broadcasts are made possible through the use of a portion of WICN's broadcast frequency. 90.5 WICN is Worcester's only NPR affiliate and the voice of arts and culture in central Massachusetts. Visit WICN.org for more info.